This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yehis Wuhib, coming up on Africa News Tonight.
The five judges from Nigeria and Sierra Leone needed to constitute the Gambian Supreme Court did not come to Banjul for Tuesday's scheduled hearing. The session was called to weigh in on President Jammeh's request to nullify December's election results.
That's Ricky Shryock reporting from Dakar on the latest development in the Gambia. Details next.
Also, Zimbabwe President Robert Mugabe met with his Chinese counterpart yesterday in Beijing. And Nigerian oil workers threatened to walk off the job tomorrow to protest employee firings in recent weeks.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story, Gambian President Yahya Jammeh's options to stay in office may be shrinking. Ricky Shryock has the story from Dakar.
The five judges from Nigeria and Sierra Leone needed to constitute the Gambian Supreme Court did not come to Banjul for Tuesday's scheduled hearing. The session was called to weigh in on President Jammeh's request to nullify December's election results. The international community has already recognized President-elect Adama Barrow as the winner and called on Jammeh to step down. The head of Gambia's Bar Association says the hearing has been rescheduled for next Monday. There has been no confirmation from the judges that they will show up for that date, which comes just 3 days before Barrow's inauguration. Three West African presidents are expected in the Gambian capital Wednesday to continue the mediation efforts led by Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari. Buhari Special Advisor Femi Edesina told VOA's Daybreak Africa that diplomacy remains the best course of action, although the West African bloc ECOWAS has not ruled out military force.
This is not interfering. This is rather mediating and peacemaking, because it's a potential. What you have on ground is like sitting on gunpowder, on a keg of gunpowder that can explode at any time. And innocent people will be affected. So it's better to work for peace by talking to President Jammeh, and that is what ECOWAS is doing.
Jammeh's allies are dwindling. This week, the Minister of Information resigned and fled to neighboring Senegal, and Jammeh fired 12 ambassadors who had spoken in favor of transition. Steve Coburn, Amnesty International's Deputy Regional Director for West and Central Africa, says the defections could give ECOWAS some strength in negotiations.
Civil society groups that you would never have thought would dare speak out like that before and are now doing so and have done so, even the Dentists Association. So I think bit by bit, there is a growing isolation. But the key thing that everyone is looking at is how much the army and the heads of the army remain with the president. There will certainly, I'm sure, be some divisions in that. But at the moment, the head of the army does seem to be staying close to Jammeh, and I think that's probably where people will be looking at for movement.
In a statement Tuesday on Twitter, President-elect Barrow said ECOWAS leaders are coming Wednesday to, in his words, persuade Jammeh to step down for the last time. Ricky Shryock for VOA News in Dakar.
A 34-year-old Tunisian man was arrested in a series of raids carried out by Italy's anti-terror squad this morning. Police confirmed that the man, Saber Hamidi, is suspected of belonging to Ansar al-Sharia. It's a Libyan organization linked to al-Qaeda that police say supports ISIS. Police are also following leads that could link Hamidi to the Tunisian man presumed responsible for the Berlin Christmas market attack. From Rome, reporter Josephine McKenna provides us with details. She also has an update on yesterday's meeting between Italy's Interior Minister Marco Minniti with Libya's Prime Minister Fayez Sarraj.
Italy's anti-terror squad arrested the 34-year-old Tunisian. His name is Saber Hamidi, and he is accused of being a part of a group called Ansar al-Sharia, a Libyan organization linked to al-Qaeda. And police said that he had also links with those who were supporting and fighting with ISIS. This particular operation targeted individuals thought to belong to terrorist organisations, and according to one of the Italian dailies, they were following up leads that came out of investigations linked to Anas Amri, the Tunisian who was presumed to be responsible for the Berlin Christmas market attack. Amri had lived in Italy for 4 years before he was involved in that attack, and so far we don't have a particular link between him and the fellow who was arrested today. But police certainly believe that the man that they arrested was dangerous and was trying to recruit people for potential attacks.
Where did this anti-terror operation take place?
The anti-terror operation took place in the region of Lazio, which surrounds the capital, Rome. With this arrest, there's been more information that's come to light because this particular fellow, Sabra Hamidi, spent time in jail already in Italy, and he's been accused of saying to fellow inmates that he intended to go to Syria to fight, and he also is accused of threatening other people in jail, other inmates. People say that he was also surrounding himself with other strong supporters of the Muslim faith while he was in jail and trying to incite more people to violence.
Was this the only arrest that took place during this raid?
So far, this is the only arrest, but it's clear that Italian police are continuing their investigation and following up leads that have arisen since the killing of Amri just before Christmas. Amri spent 4 years in prison in Sicily. He has had many contacts with inmates and other contacts across Italy, and so police are still following up those leads.
Also yesterday, we reported on the meeting in Tripoli with Italian Interior Minister Marco Minniti and the Prime Minister of Libya, Fayez Sarraj. Can you tell us what came out of that meeting?
Well, that was quite significant because the Interior Minister, Marco Minniti, went to Libya to try and put in place a stronger accord between the two countries. Italy's agreed now to reopen its embassy. It's the first foreign ministry to reopen in the divided country. It closed its embassy in 2015 when the country descended into widespread conflict, and that's allowed the people smugglers to really thrive with impunity. Italy has been wanting to strengthen its relationship with Libya. The foreign ministry said that the ambassador would present his credentials to the local government today. But this is all about increasing cooperation on security, the fight against terrorism, and trying to stop human trafficking. The Italian government also wants to strengthen moves that will allow them to repatriate more illegal migrants. And so this meeting has really been part of that as well.
Also, you have some late-breaking information regarding Frontex. Can you tell us about that?
Frontex is the European Union Border and Coast Guard Agency. Now, it's launching a new group of experts who will be hired to support the repatriation of migrants across the EU. This pool will consist of around 690 monitors, escorts and specialists, and that will be particularly targeting the countries of Greece and Italy, which have been bearing the brunt of the Mediterranean migrant crisis. So that's quite significant, and Italy is clearly wanting to take a stronger line to try and stop the flow of migrants after seeing 180,000 arrivals in 2016, and also step up repatriation of illegal migrants from Italy back to their home countries.
That was reporter Josephine McKenna. She spoke with me from Rome.
Zimbabwe President Robert Mugabe met with his Chinese counterpart yesterday in Beijing. President Xi Jinping said the friendship between China and Zimbabwe has stood the test of time. Zimbabwe State Television reports China has pledged to provide support for agriculture and infrastructure development. The Zimbabwean leader praised China for its support of African countries for many years.
Nigerian oil workers say they will walk off the job tomorrow to protest employee firings in recent weeks. The Nigeria Union of Petroleum and Natural Gas Workers says thousands of workers will put down their tools at Exxon and Chevron facilities if current government talks fail to resolve the issues. Nigeria is one of Africa's largest oil producers, but has already taken a financial beating by lower crude prices over the past year. Militant attacks at production facilities in the Niger Delta have also caused major problems. Also, the French news agency AFP reports that a separate walkout began today over salary disputes at pumping stations owned by the Nigerian Petroleum Development Company. At least 12 production plants have been affected by the strike, which could in turn affect domestic power supplies. You're listening to Africa News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15, 580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
I'm Yehi Suhib, 16 past the hour. Here's a recap of our top stories. Gambian President Yahya Jammeh's options to stay in office may be shrinking. Zimbabwe President Robert Mugabe met with his Chinese counterpart yesterday in Beijing. And Nigerian oil workers threatened to walk off the job tomorrow to protest employee firing. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com.
The target date to achieve the UN Sustainable Development Goals is 2030, but a think tank says while African countries will make progress toward those goals, they will not meet the deadline. The assessment was made at a recent joint conference of the South African Institute for Security Studies and the British Defense Ministry. VOA's Joe DiCapua reports.
Analysts say a realistic timetable for African countries to fully achieve the Sustainable Development Goals is 2045 or 2050. Yaki Sillier, chairman of the Board of Trustees for the Institute for Security Studies, says before the 2007-2008 global recession, African countries were growing rapidly. Since then, they're following what he calls a low-growth pathway.
So Africa should be growing if we want to really reduce poverty and inequality and increase employment. Africa needs to grow at 7% and above in terms of average growth rates and maintain that year on year. We do not believe that Africa is going to reach those growth rates. Africa is growing around 4% on average is our forecast out to about 2030, 2035.
Sylvia says while 4% may sound like a decent growth rate, it's not enough to bring the needed economic changes.
With those kind of growth rates and with the high levels of inequality that we have, we don't see that increases in income are trickling down to the poorest. So Africa grows for some, and you have a growing middle class, a small, very small upper class that are doing fairly well, but a large component of Africa, those people that are what we refer to as extremely poor, that actual number does not decline. The number actually steadily increases over time.
The extremely poor, about 37% of Africans, live on less than $1.20 per day. Sillier says besides high rates of inequality, Africa must address a rapidly growing population.
There is a large growing worker population in Africa, but they have to feed many kids. They have to look at increasing number of elderly people. This means that Africa is not getting the benefit of a larger worker age population, that is the age of population from 15 to 64. It means that we really need significant growth rates. Remember that China, which had the most amazing experience in terms of lifting, I think it's something like 400 million Chinese out of extreme poverty, did that by growing more than 10% a year.
He says that growth rate lasted for about 30 years. But China is one country, even if it does have a population of 1 billion. Africa is diverse. It has about a billion people spread over 54 countries.
One of the advantages that China has at low levels of income is that of being an authoritarian state. At low levels of development, an authoritarian government can deliver high, more effective growth. and more effective delivery of services than a democracy. But as you go up the income curve, it becomes more difficult. And at medium to high levels of income, a lack of inclusion becomes a drag on growth.
The Institute for Security Studies analyst says this is where rich countries have an advantage over China, which has an authoritarian government. Wealthy nations are usually democracies, with income and education levels contributing to economic growth. Silja says that's a good model for Africa.
The vast majority of authoritarian countries in Africa have disastrous growth records. China and countries like Ethiopia and Rwanda have remarkable development-oriented authoritarian governments. Many African countries have none of this. But hopefully over time, democracy will translate into higher levels of growth and more sustainable growth.
Silja says for African countries to grow more rapidly, they need governments to focus on development. This includes manufacturing and an agricultural revolution that allows Africans to feed themselves.
The most important step for Africa beyond getting its agriculture, small holdings, small-scale agriculture going, which is different from subsistence agriculture, is to build a manufacturing and industrialization process. And this is not happening in Africa. We are all going into the services economy, and that does not provide the glue that holds your agricultural and your services sector together. All of this is premised on governance, on the quality of governance, and forward-looking government investment in infrastructure, health, and education. But there are no magic shortcuts to this.
What's more, Silja says stronger democracies are needed in Africa to boost economic growth and achieve the Sustainable Development Goals.
What Africa has is very often not real democracy. We go through the motions of elections. We go to the polls, but governing parties in most instances manipulate the process. So what Africa really needs is free, fair, and competitive elections. In most African countries, with rare exception, that is not the case. The majority of African countries go through, I wouldn't call it a sham democracy, but it is going through the motions of multipartyism, but it doesn't really give you the benefit of democracy. So very important to get those basics right.
He says over time, democracy and development are about institutionalization, moving away from the strongman rule that passes power from one family member to another. He says voters in a true democracy want their voices heard.
They want a greater say over their own lives and to determine the lives of their children. That is very much the story in Africa.
There are 17 Sustainable Development Goals. The Institute for Security Studies says attaining them in Africa will be uneven, also because some are more easily reached than others, like low-hanging fruit. But it says uneven progress is still progress. Joe DiCapua, VOA News, Washington.
A new lawsuit in a U.S. court is reawakening a century-old mass slaughter of Namibia's Herero and Nama peoples by German colonial forces, an event that has been described as the 20th century's first genocide. VOA's Anita Powell reports from Johannesburg.
When Vikwi Rukora was a boy in what is now Namibia, his family would gather around a fire and tell stories. They were stories of horror and humiliation, of unarmed women and children killed by German soldiers, of terrified families driven into the searing desert to die of thirst, and of concentration camps, whose gruesome indignities would be repeated on new victims in Germany and Poland decades later.
Untold suffering, misery, and brutalities. When we sat around the bonfire at night, this is where the oral history would be passed on from generation to generation. And that's where it came to know about, what happened to our ancestors.
Rukoro is 62 and the elected paramount chief of the Herero people, who number about 400,000. Between 1904 and 1908, tens of thousands of indigenous Herero and Nama people were killed by German troops after they revolted against colonial rule. More than a century later, Rukoro is leading a charge to sue the German government in U.S. District Court in New York, seeking an apology and group reparations. Germany has not issued a formal apology for this dark episode, but the issue has been discussed between the two governments for at least a decade, with no resolution. Rucoro says if Germany does not allow Nama and Herrera representatives to participate in talks, there will be consequences. He threatened a public relations and diplomatic offensive, and says his group will lobby to have Germany labeled a war criminal and a pariah state.
We're not going to sit here 100 years for another 120 years and allow an imperialist type of situation to continue to deprive us as Africans of our rights. No, no, no.
Germany's position on the apology and negotiations remains unclear. The German Foreign Ministry did not immediately respond to VOA's request for comment. But 2 years ago, the foreign minister said, "We think that the time has come to intensify and formalize this exchange between the governments of our two countries." That has not happened, says German human rights activist Christian Kopp, who says Germany should apologize and offer reparations, but he feels many Germans do not agree.
I think Germany would be divided. There are some, and I wouldn't say the majority, maybe 50%, maybe even less, who would feel better after this. And there are others, and there are many, many people who say, well, why is it always the Germans who have to ask for forgiveness? So there will be many Germans who will not be happy about this.
Rucoro's lawyer, New York-based Ken McCallion, says the damages cannot be understated.
They went from being a very successful and relatively prosperous indigenous people to really grinding poverty, and that stain has really continued to today. In addition to that, there were cultural losses. In eradicating the people, the German authorities really were also seeking to eradicate their history and culture.
Rucoro stressed that he is not seeking individual payouts for all living descendants. Instead, he wants reparations that benefit the entire community. And he says he feels a deep responsibility to keep agitating. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports coming up at 18:30 UTC. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Curtis Bynum, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, a discussion on the challenges of political transitions in Africa, the Democratic Republic of Congo, Tanzania, and Gambia, to name a few. Right here on the next Straight Talk Africa at 18:30 UTC.
What's happening, Africa? This is Jackson Bungani in Washington, D.C.
And I'm Nadia Sami in Johannesburg, South Africa. Thank you for joining us on Upfront each Wednesday, 17:30 UTC, for a lively discussion on issues that are topical, challenging, and always engaging.
The show tries to capture that fundamentally aspirational nature of today's African youth. As you've noticed, right here on the show, we talk about everything. Nothing is off the table.
I am a social networker, often online. For me, it's all about making connections, meeting people.
Ooh, without my family, I don't think I would have been here today because they gave me a lot of support morally.
Can't AU, African Union, can these people really solve this nonsense of rigging election, brutality during what election violence, all this whatever?
Employment rates are climbing, so definitely there's less jobs in the market now.
Remember to connect with us on Facebook and on Twitter at Upfront Africa.
Hello, Africa. I'm James Butte, host of VOA's Daybreak Africa. When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you the news as it happens. Listen to Daybreak Africa Monday through Friday at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC. And our 5 minute newscast come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.